So on the DCI tours, we've been doing certain kinds of meditation. Things are evolving as we teach in different countries. And I think it's nice because we get to teach hundreds of new people, thousands of new people. So we get to see what works and what doesn't work on a daily basis on a tour. So I think we've been to, 20 cities in the last 3 months or something, and we get a chance to see what works and what doesn't work and experiment. The first DCI level is like generally making stuff happen in your life, like, financial independence, what do you call it, health, relationships. And then level two is deeper on that. It's the four sets of four, which we can talk about slowly. But level three is meditation. And then level six is again meditation. So they do two levels of meditation. But what we've kind of learned is that we tried one day, we took three of the preliminary meditations, which are not real meditation because they don't have a what?
Virtuous object.
Virtuous object, good. They have an object, but they don't have a particularly virtuous object. So we did them all in a row one day, I think by accident, and it worked really well. So I thought this week we could try those three. There are three preliminary meditations that we can do, and then they get you into a nice space to start your real meditation. Okay. Then for real meditation, we can do, I think, coffee meditation, but we'll talk about that, okay? So let's start with the three preliminary meditations. And I'm going to do them kind of long. Personally, I like to do them about 60 or 70 breaths or something like that. I don't know, how many breaths per minute, do you know? Is it eight? Eight or nine, something like that. Anyway, it's about 9 minutes on each one, something like that, which I like. So, you ready? It'll be three preliminaries. If it seems too much, I'll stop and we'll take a break, okay? So we tell people, this works really good, Scott. Scott's really good at it. What? What do we tell people before the...
To get out there and cough somewhere.
Yeah, like cough, purposely cough. Okay. Blow your nose. Harder. Sure. It works, okay? If you need tissue, it's there. Anybody need tissue? It's good if you're teaching this meditation to get the people to cough, and because then they see what they're not supposed to do when they start. Sorry, one more. Okay, so close your eyes. Take a posture that you can hold for maybe 20 minutes. I have this thing with my hands, like sometimes I put them palms down. And I don't know, too much heat builds up. Then I put them palms up and my wrists hurt after a while. And I've been experimenting with putting them like this, you see? So you might try it. I don't know. It kind of seems to work. I tend to put too much of an arch in my lower back, so try to tuck your tailbone. I guess the theory is that it stretches the whole spine all the way down to between your legs. So, and I didn't know, I had yoga teachers yelling at me, telling me to tuck my tailbone. I didn't know what they were talking about. But if you pull in your lower stomach, it automatically puts a curve in the very lowest part of your spine. It tucks the lowest part of the spine, almost towards the place, almost towards your pubis, right? Then slightly bring your shoulder blades together, which opens up your chest. I found that if I put my hands over my knees, which used to feel really good, it collapses my chest in, and I get a sunken chest. And then I've been playing around with drawing my hands back over my thighs towards my hips and puffing out my chest. So you can try that. If you put your hands on your knees, it sort of puts a cavity in your chest. And then if you draw your hands back towards your hips, more towards your hips, even further than you think, towards your hips, and then it puffs your chest out. But then don't lose the tucked tailbone at the same time. And the first meditation we're going to do is like, you could say, sitting like a stone and trying to be completely immobile and unmoving. So, I don't know, my first meditation teacher was Goenka, who founded Vipassana system, Vipassana. And he came to Dharamsala, His Holiness asked him to come, and I was there at the time, and they taught us, and they taught all of the monks from His Holiness's private monastery, which is Nechung. And we were staying with them, like 50 monks, and Goenka would make us sit for, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours without moving at all. And he would yell at us if we moved our eyebrows or furrowed our foreheads. And so I'd like you to try that. See if you can make your body completely immobile. Except for the fall and rise of your chest. The forehead is completely relaxed. There's no wrinkles, there's no movement on the forehead, there's no tightness in the corners of your mouth. The eyelids are released completely. No effort expended in holding the eyelids, they just drop. The lips are not tightly pressed together, they are loose. Loosen. So see if you can imagine releasing all the wrinkles in your face. Places where there are wrinkles are places where small muscles are tightening. And see if you can not move those muscles. I tend to rock from side to side or up and back a tiny bit. See if you can just come to a center place where there's a balance, where you're not up or back or to either side. See if you can position your rib cage over your hips in such a way that it's almost like a broom standing up in the middle of the room. And then we'll spend about, I don't know, 5 minutes just concentrating on not moving. And your mind will wander and bring it back to this room and bring it back to the idea that nothing is moving in your body, not even tiny movements of your toes or fingers. Even your chest, as little movement as possible as you breathe. So we'll go for about 5 minutes. Just relax. When you remember to check yourself for not moving in any way, even if you can try to control your swallowing, which is hard for me, but see if you can swallow less. When you're ready, you can come out and can move, stretch. Okay. Take a stretch. I think for me, I get little muscular movements around my face and stuff from as I think of my worries and hopes and fears, right? Then your expression changes. Even in meditation, right? So try to control those movements. Try to keep those still. Now we'll start a breath meditation. There's a thing in Chadong. Do you know Chadong? Cha's what?
Tea.
Yeah. Dong means a trunk. Like yesterday, the Dongbo of the tree was made of silver. But Chadong is a Tibetan tea churn. And they're made of, they're like a barrel with a bands, copper bands or brass bands around it. And then it has a plunger. And the real ones are about this big and this wide. They look like a cannon. And there's personal jadongs that are this big. And you can make your own cup of tea in it. And so when I think of meditating, you fill it with water and tea and butter and salt and milk and soda and nutmeg. And then you dump it all in there, and then the lid is attached to the plunger, and you put the lid down, and then the plunger comes up and down like this, you know. And that's how, try it on a breath meditation, okay? So your mind is supposed to be fixed here at the opening of the plunger, and then the breath is coming out, coming and going, sliding against the lid, okay? So this is the lid, and then the breath is coming and going, but you're stationary, you're staying here. So you feel the breath sliding in and out. And I like to think of it as a solid piece. The breath is like a solid piece, maybe rubber or something. And try thinking of that. If you want to, and you're into the inner body, there's a instruction where you do the breath meditation in the Minsam, okay? We talked about Minsam, right? We had a lady, Indian lady up there. So you fix the mind here, and you don't follow the physical breath, you follow the psychic breath, right? So that's coming and going here, and then it comes out, and then it comes back down into the central channel and ultimately reaches between your legs. So it's like, I like to see it like one solid piece of breath, like a piece of rubber. And it's going like this, and then it's going like this. And the plunger is here, right? And it's coming down. So it's almost like one piece of breath coming and going. And then what's really useful is to do longer exhales than inhales. So focus on making the exhales luxurious and long. And in the scriptures they say, see how far out from your head it can get. And they say if you're pretty good, it's 3 inches. If you're better, it's 6 inches. Maybe you can get up to 12 inches. But you see the breath coming out and then coming back in. It's one piece of breath, like a drinking straw. It's coming out and then coming back in. And then they say make it a little contest with yourself and see how, don't go crazy because you'll get out of breath, but see how far from the Minsam. What is that in Sanskrit? Do you know? Yeah, the hole is called Bruvor Madhya. Okay, Bruvor Madhya. Bruva means brow. Brow came from it. Brow came from Bruva. B-H-R-U. And then in Sanskrit they have a singular, a plural, and then between that they have a dual case, okay? A separate set of endings for two things, which is makes life difficult. So the dual of eyebrow is bruvos, and then before an M, S has to change to R. So it's bruvor madhya, like dhanur asana, which is dhanus. But before A, the S has to change to R. So dhanur isn't the word, it's dhanus. And then it changes to dhanur. So anyway, bruvor means in the middle of the two. Madhya means middle. Medium came from that. Middle came from that. And bruva means these brows. So bruvor madhya. So then take the breath in and out of there. And then feel it coming down your spine. And see if you can track it down your spine to the spot between your legs. So at the peak of the inhale, it will touch the spot between your legs. And then breathe it out. And especially pay attention to how far out you can get it on the exhale. And don't worry about the inhale. The inhale will come in faster and it will strike the place between your legs after having come down your spine, right? So see if you can track it down your spine. If you're doing like a yin yoga, right, that can be a nice focus, is on the breath. If you're holding a pose for a long time, you can feel the breath sliding along the spine and coming down to here. And then see how far out you can take it. Because you're waiting for Anatole to stop the pose. Okay. So instead of wasting your time, you can track your breath up and down your spine. And that helps to clear your central channel and puts you in a better mood and helps your health. And ultimately you see emptiness and all that stuff. Okay, here we go. Yeah. I think a pause after the exhale is really useful. Okay, if you're doing Dorje Denpa, that's where you would do the ah. Okay, I don't believe in pausing on the inhale consciously. Your body pauses slightly automatically, but I think it can give you lung if you pause on the inhale, because then you've got more like breath and energy inside your body, and then it tends to accumulate over time, and then you get nervous or you get anxiety. But if you can learn to pause on the exhale after the exhale, that's nice. Okay, bahur ante, at the end of the exhale. In the yoga tradition. Okay, ready? All right, here we go. Which is Bahus, I think, and then it changes to R. Bahurante. So again, try sliding your hands back towards your hips along your thighs, which puffs out your chest. Bring your shoulder blades together. Tuck your tailbone slightly. If you're not sure how to do that, just squish in your lower stomach. Push your belly button towards your spine. Pull your belly button towards your spine. Relax your face. Relax your fingers. Relax, especially concentrate on your eyelids. Make your eyelids. If your eyelids are relaxed, then your face is relaxed. Go into still as a stone meditation. If someone were watching you from the outside, they wouldn't be sure if you were a statue or a person. Somehow it helps me to imagine somebody watching me, and they can't really tell if I'm made of stone or if I'm flesh and blood. There's nothing moving, especially not the facial expressions. Now try to bring your attention to Bhruvar Madhya, the spot between your eyebrows, just a little bit higher up than most people's eyebrows. So slightly towards the middle of your forehead, between your eyebrows. See if you can feel some center of energy there. Now move the attention into the head, maybe half an inch, so you're not concentrating on a spot which is painted on the skin. You're concentrating on an energy center, maybe half an inch into the head, into the middle of, towards the middle of the head. But still between your eyebrows and slightly raised, so that will actually stimulate that chakra and help your concentration. There's some negative, possible negative effects of concentrating your heart chakra. You can get a little bit nervous, or so you might try this Ajna chakra, the chakra at the Bhruva Madhya, in between the eyebrows, into the head, about half an inch. See if you can find a spot that, when you hit it, your concentration locks down in a pleasant way, and not in a way that feels like a headache coming on or something like that. So be gentle. Don't force it. Try to slide sweetly into the center of energy, and stay there lightly. Now on the exhales, as you exhale, imagine the breath is coming out of this spot, not out of your nostrils of your nose, but the breath is being exhaled out of that spot between your eyebrows, lower forehead. And rather than going down as the breath from your nostrils tends to angle down as it comes out, this breath is being exhaled straight out in front of your head like a plunger of a Jadong Tibetan tea churn. And I'm going to be quiet, and I'd like you to slowly work on that breath coming out further and further. Personally, I like to make it a blue light, like a ray of blue light that it slides out further and further each time I exhale. See how far you can go out. Don't tighten your forehead. Keep it loose and relax. Don't fight to make it long, but see how far out of the head this blue ray of breath, prana, can slide. And then there's a slight pause on the exhale, at the end of the exhale, and then it slides back in. So let's try. About 5 minutes. Keep it gentle and don't tighten your forehead. Keep your eyes unfocused behind your closed eyelids. Try not to focus the eyes towards the forehead, but as if you were gazing off into the distance and thinking about someone you love, right? So your eyes are not focused. Now just one more element, which is on the in-breath, on the inhalation. See if you can imagine that sliding rod of blue light touches a tiny spot of energy, ball of energy, between your legs. So on the inhale, draw the blue ray of light, the rod, down the spine to touch the... On the end of the inhale, it touches the place between your legs, and then it heads back out through the spot between your eyebrows. Okay. No pause on the inhalation. It touches and then it starts back out again. But you can pause on the end of the exhale. And slowly, when you're ready, you can come out. Stretch. Any questions? We have like 5 minutes if you have any questions. No?
Perspectives, like you can either be like completely inhabiting your body and feeling it and watching it going in and out, or at the third eye. Or can you talk a little bit about those perspectives, like how they could be beneficial, or how you choose one, like, or do you, you know, watch her or something?
Yeah. So Nicole's asking, when you do a meditation, you can imagine that you are watching yourself, right? Or you can imagine that you're half and half, like when the breath goes out, you're almost outside your body, and when the breath comes in, you're inside your body. And I think for me personally, it's useful to take different perspectives. So as I said, when I do the stillness, physical stillness, immobility meditation, I like to think I'm outside watching me and you know, like walking around and seeing, is he moving anything? Or, you know, I find it useful to take the aspect of being outside of my body and watching my body. And if you're teaching like DCI or something like that, then I think it can be useful to imagine that your students are watching you. To see, oh, what's it like to be totally still? And then I think it puts a good pressure on you to learn to be totally still. I think part of teaching is to be, in Russia they call it Живой пример, which means living example. And then I think that pressure to be a living example can be useful if it's handled well. So I can imagine some of your own students looking at you and saying, oh, today we have a chance to see what it is to be totally still. So the aspect is not only of yourself on the outside of you, but somebody else watching you, you know. And somehow that helps me, I don't know. In Tibetan it's called Ngotsa. Ngotsa and Chelyu are supposed to be the two motivations for being a good person, right? It comes from the Abhidhamma Kosha. And Ngotsa means you want to be good because you have an inner urge to be good. So even if you were in a room by yourself and you had a chance to do something slightly wrong, you would avoid it because of how you feel about yourself. And then Chelyu means to be good, thinking of how other people would see you. Like I should be a good example. So I could pick my nose right now, but I'll wait. I'll hold off. You know what I mean, or something like that. Or I shouldn't get upset. Ngotsa says I shouldn't get upset today because I'm that's not worthy of me. Ngotsa is that. And Chelyu means I shouldn't get upset because if my students or my friends see me upset, you know, it will hurt them. So I think you can do that in meditation, you know. In the Abhidharma it says those two mental functions are the foundation of all good behavior. All good karma is based, all good karma has those two motivations at its root. It's in the Abhidharma, it says that. So 17 centuries ago. So I think when you're meditating, partly ngotsa from the inside, I'm observing the breath coming and going from the viewpoint of inside of me, and then Chelyu, I'm observing Geshe Michael sitting on his cushion, and is he totally still, and is he focused, and is his forehead moving, you know, as he worries about the day to come, you know, and or is it totally still? I find both are. I think you could switch between the two. You know, I think it would be useful. I think then you would get both of those mental functions going, and then it's good. And I don't mean to, you know, like if you're doing yoga and you're worried about how you look to other people, then that's not a good motivation, right? So I think there's a healthy outer aspect and there's an unhealthy outer aspect. And I think you know the difference. Okay, so we'll stop.